All right, if you're listening and watching the podcast here on Shark Week, it is a distinguished honor of mine to introduce our next guest, David McGuire from Shark Stewards, the founder of Shark Stewards, as well as the director. So how are you, sir? Good to see you.
Great. Thank you. Happy Shark Week.
Happy Shark Week. I'm glad we could put this together. You've been very busy. So tell me, like, every day changes, it seems like. You're doing all kinds of awesome, cool things. Where are you right now and what are you doing?
I'm in Kona, Hawaii. Since COVID, I kind of reconnected with Polynesia, where we started Shark Stewards, actually, in a documentary we made over 20 years ago on shark finning. And so I've been working in Hawaii on local marine managed protected areas, supporting local Hawaiian communities and scientists on several shark conservation bills in the past few years. And working on a film on shark conservation.
All cool, awesome things. I'm a little jealous. I wish I were there working on, in Hawaii, working on shark conservation films. What are you, so it's a documentary, I would imagine, that's you're putting together yourself?
Yeah, it's a bit of a redo of my first film that eponymously named Shark Stewards. It wasn't really the plan, but the backstory of Shark Stewards and my filmmaking is we were on a expedition crossing the Pacific, looking at coral reefs and diving. And we were diving reefs in the Tuamotus, primarily in French Polynesia, between Tahiti and the Marquesas. And really, like, hardly anybody lives there, and nobody lives there. A few coconut trees and a lot of fish and a lot of sharks and some islands, but others had no sharks. And we were able to sort of, you know, well, later empirically correlate the relationship between the loss of apex predators and coral reef complexity and health. But at the time, we actually anecdotally, it's like, well, first of all, where are the sharks? Because some of these atolls had hundreds of sharks, like Fakarava, like, you know, you jump in, it's like shark fest in the past.
Yeah.
And others had none. And so the local guys are like, oh, the tuna fishermen get money for the shark fins. And so this was crazy. This was inconceivable. We saw sharks on the bottom without fins. So actually went back, did some research on the way through in Papeete. We filmed this boat, Taiwan flag, and is lined with shark fins. It was a tuna boat. And I went up, you know, none of this was illegal. Shark finning wasn't condemned. And it was just inexplicable to us. And we actually were able to talk to the guys and film it. And it's when I went back to California, to UC Berkeley, where I worked at the time, it's did some research like this. Nobody was doing anything. This was before Rob Stewart did Sharkwater. There was really no exposure. So we went back and made a documentary called Shark Stewards of the Reef to advocate for the first shark fin trade ban, as well as the establishment of the Papahanaumokuakea, the first marine national monument established under President Bush. So it was an advocacy film, still on YouTube, on our Shark Stewards YouTube, but it was made for PBS, but it was also translated into Chinese. And so that more Chinese people who are the major consumers saw this film and hopefully saw sharks in the wild as well. So the film that we're doing now is a bit of a redo in a different sense, in a more triumphant context, 16 or 17 years since the establishment of the monument. We're now working on National Marine Sanctuary status, which will provide more science, more protection for other critically endangered species like monk seals and sea turtles, provide more funding for NOAA to reduce marine debris, which is a huge issue on the islands, the windward sides. And so the film will really be about a feel good, still have that Polynesian cultural connection, which is very strong, and which why I think it's Hawaii is the strongest, certainly the strongest state in the nation, but in some places in the world, there's no shark fishing legal in the state of Hawaii.
Right.
So that's what we're hopefully letting local people tell their stories of why they want to protect Mano, the shark, how they've done it, how it's been supported by scientists and advocates, and how we can use that as a model elsewhere in Hawaii and in the world.
Yeah, thanks for doing that too. And then thanks for your awesome work with that. I know the first film definitely still holds up, but certainly we've come a long way in 17 years. So it's nice to see kind of a redo or a part two, whatever you call it, which is a good way to measure kind of the success that you help put forward with everything that you've done since then at that time and then the last 17 years. So I think that's a really cool concept that you're working on that. And yeah, for obviously HD, for all the accomplishments.
Well, it's going to, thank you. It's from tape on, you know, standard definition tape to now 4 and 6K. So the images will be much better. Different. Also, I didn't know how to shoot then. They just gave me a camera because I was sort of a photographer, but they're like, hey, you shoot, right? I'm like, kind of.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure. A biologist. Yeah, whatever training. You need me to do.
And they're like, here's an underwater camera. And so, you know, of course, I flooded one in several sense, but yeah, I'm a better cameraman and the technology is so much better. So less talking head. This one will be a lot more personal story told by the people as opposed to an interview. Yeah. So a little bit more dynamic, more action, I hope. And this is a short. And we're using it actually to advocate for increased protection of this shark behind me, the oceanic white tip, which is critically endangered. And we're working to phase out gear in some of the large tuna fisheries, the longline fisheries, which actually started here in Hawaii to ban wire longlines in the tuna fleet, which are killing thousands of these sharks, and there aren't that many left. It's estimated that there's less than 5% of the original population of oceanic white tips in the Pacific left. Actually led by Native Hawaiians also to do that in the WestPAC, the Western Central Pacific Fisheries Management Council. So we want to take that to the Eastern Pacific, and we would have the whole Pacific at least less bycatch of some of the most endangered sharks, which includes silkies, and then other sharks that are threatened, like, you know.
Yeah, and bycatch is such an ugly, scary thing, you know. And when you talked about the percentages, you're saying less than 5% are left. Is this because of overfishing?
What's the main culprit? Overfishing, I guess. Good question. It's multifactorial, really, because post-World War II, we really became focused on industrialization of extraction on the ocean. And we had a lot more technology, not just the West, but the East as well, and applied that towards, well, fishing whales too, killing whales, but also industrial fisheries. And unfortunately, these mega ships now are, you know, owned by several nations, including China is the largest. And they're, you know, putting out long lines that are 100 miles long with thousands and thousands of baited hooks. And seabirds like albatross, sea turtles, of course, any air breather is going to drown. And sharks, many of the ramp ventilated sharks, like the sharks that need to swim, also will drown. So these wire leaders are killing, historically, over half the catch with sharks. It's less so now because we have far fewer sharks. As the value and the economics placed on shark fin and the change in China about 20 years ago from the Mao, post-Mao, to really capitalistic communism, there's a lot more middle class, a lot more spending power of Chinese. And this kind of blast to the past of the Song Dynasty, this demand for shark fin soup, this delicacy exponentially increase, and where sharks that might have been alive on long lines and released the value for their fins suddenly shifted that practice to whether live or dead, they would take the fins. So bycatch has been a huge problem, but, you know, of course, sea surface temperature, climate change, plastic, many impacts facing especially apex predators that bioaccumulate toxins and now we're fishing sharks directly, shifting off more as a food source or for fish meal because we're overfished all the tuna stocks. So the big fish are in general in trouble, specifically, especially the oceanic white tips, which traditionally used to be the first ones on a line. They were the most abundant marine vertebrate 50 years ago, and now they are probably the most threatened.
It's so sad.
Generation, really.
When you talk, it's just so sad. I mean, it's so China's the biggest culprit with the shark fin trade. They're still sucking them up like they're French fries, right? You don't see any slowing down from over there happening.
It has slowed down. Yeah, it definitely has slowed down. And some of that we cannot take credit for, meaning we, the shark stewards or WildAid or the active shark conservation groups. The Xi Jinping, when he came in, imposed these austerity measures that had a whole list of things that Communist Party members who were notoriously corrupt could not participate in or partake in. And that includes like having a Bentley or having a beach house or serving shark fin soup. So shark fin soup and other exotic wildlife actually were on this list. And the good thing about communism is they don't mess around. If it's the finance.
You're going to die if you don't play by the rules.
And so that trickled down to government functions or visiting dignitary functions. So where shark fin soup was de rigueur or whatever the equivalent of the French is in Chinese, suddenly is taboo. To keep mixing my metaphors and languages. So that had a significant reduction.
Right.
There is increased. WildAid certainly did a great job. I mean, they basically kicked out of it, but they had Yao Ming on billboards.
Yeah, I remember.
By the Chinese and we do a lot of our media to young people in social media that nobody in the US ever sees. I hate to like point fingers at races because I've dealt with this. I'm a white man, right? And I'm dealing with a cultural sensitivity. So what we did is created a coalition of Asian Pacific Islanders and Chinese Americans and Chinese Canadians and now Chinese Europeans to say it's not their culture, right? We can shift our cultural values. And I think that is occurring in China. I just hope it's happening soon and quickly enough. And that goes for pangolin. You look at Wuhan and the transfer of diseases, zoonotic diseases in Guangzhou, the wildlife, terrible conditions.
Obviously China has a long way to go. And I think most people understand you're not pointing fingers. And as a white man, it's I've had that argument before during the pandemic. I made a lot of jabs at China for letting for handling the coronavirus the way they did. And a lot of people were like, oh, well, you're a white man. It's Chinese. I said, I'm not pointing fingers at Asian Americans or at Pacific Islanders. I'm pointing it at the communist government is the issue. I'm referring to China like that. So I feel like a lot of people kind of get that. And I hope they're not, singling you out in that regard, but it sounds like China has done some good steps and they just have a long, they have some more steps to go in terms of the shark fin trade and cultural
fishing in general
and fishing in general of what's sustainable and what's not and kind of how to go about that. I want to encourage people to go to sharkstewards.org. So you founded Shark Stewards. When did this start? Was it early 2000s?
Yeah, we formalized in 2006. I kind of lingered on with my day job at Cal for an extra year or two, and then just cut the cord, the umbilical, which is hard to do because I love universities, I love academia, but I wasn't happy with what I was doing. I felt I could do so much more as an activist. So 2006, we really started on that voyage though between 2001. And 2003.
You mentioned your background in academia and you're an academist. And they kind of go hand in hand with conversation. You can be passionate about something, but to really move change and move people, you do need to be very educated. So I feel like it's kind of a good double threat from you is that you're backing up what you're doing because you understand how it all works, how it all ties together.
Well, I think what distinguishes us and is important to me as a marine biologist and somebody who's worked in environmental health is that, that we're fact-based. We try to back up. We're passionate, too. I am passionate. I'm not a shark hugger. I'm not a shark toucher, I really appreciate them. But it's really like I wasn't into sharks. I studied whales as an undergraduate. I love the ocean. I studied environmental toxicology, chemicals. But it was just
that's very interesting.
they're the symbols of ocean health, really. And that's something that really presented itself to me serendipitously and fortuitously, really. It was just like, wow, sharks are getting killed. Of course, as a surfer growing up in the ocean, you know about sharks. We're aware of sharks. You know, this is Shark Week. Jaws is turning 50 next year. This is 35 years of Discovery Channel programming. I just wrote an article about the Jaws effect, and there's a lot of ripple effect for good or bad from some of this programming.
But yeah,
sharks get our attention, and if we can flag that, you know, fly that flag of sharks as symbols of ocean health or, you know, health decline because of their complex role, because of their integration into the sophisticated food web in the ocean and their the impacts of their removal, that saving sharks can save a lot of other species, and it gets our attention quickly. I mean, you just see the programming. I mean, Discovery Channel said it's number one television viewed this week. They dominate the market. That market, by the way, is white men between 17 and 49.
So easily.
Maybe Jason Momoa will help. He, you know, being studly charismatic, handsome.
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to help change it. I don't think the Jason Momoa fans are going to tune in the Shark Week. I'm sorry. They're doing. I hope they do. But and I think Jason Momoa is one of the better guests we've had in years, in a long time. Actually, there's been some great guests over the years, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there's been others where you're like, I don't even know if they knew what a shark was before they did it. It's just, it's been up and down, but I have nothing to love for Shark Week. And I will post this link in the video description and the audio links, what David mentioned, and the article is on shark stewards. It's how Jaws influenced shark perception. And anyone who's listened to and watched the show, especially over Shark Week, we've talked a lot about this stuff. So it's I feel like it's appropriate to ask you your opinion, David. Do you feel like we've reached a tipping point in terms of public perception of sharks, that they're not dangerous, they're not going to hurt you? Are we there yet? Are we close to being there in terms of getting past this whole sharks are scary, sharks are bad perception?
I definitely think that there's been a shift in California where
that means
up.
No.
Globally, I would say no.
Right.
You're seeing this sort of Jaws effect in right now on the East Coast with the increase of white shark populations there and the closing proximity to coastal cities, especially elite areas. I think that in some degree has been exacerbated by technology, and particularly one group that you can live track sharks. And those sharks have been there. You know, the seals are coming back. The sharks are protected, so they're coming back. There has not been any statistically or significant increase in human encounters or shark attacks, yet you see a lot more concern and stories, particularly, I think, on the Eastern Seaboard about white shark increase in population. In California, Dr. Chris Lowe at Cal State Long Beach, you know, we at the Cal Academy, I think we've been able to scientifically defray Stanford, certainly, the relative risk. And people, I can't get it. You know, I'm an active member of Surf Rider Foundation. I talk to surfers all the time. I do a lot of public speaking and a lot of ocean, open water swimming and surfing. And for the most part, people get it. But elsewhere, no. There's a lot of ignorance, and particularly we work in Southeast Asia, and the divers get it. Those are our biggest peeps. Those are the people we connect with the most because they want to see sharks. And the tourists, the snorkelers or the noodlers, you know, floating around who barely know how to swim, especially Asian
the
visitors,
noodlers.
Who they are terrified. They don't get it. And there's hardly any sharks left. I mean, they're more common in the soup than they are in the ocean in these areas we're trying to protect in Indonesia and Malaysia.
So sad.
So that we have a long way to go with education. I think programming in those languages is critical. Like, we need a Chinese Shark Week in other languages and other cultures with that context, with those stars too, you know. And I think actually that's where Momoa, and you know, last year with
he
Dwayne
can help
Johnson,
bridge the gap.
You know, he's Polynesian blood. He's got the mano. He's got the tattoos. He's an activist.
He does
in Hawaii for Hawaiian cultural values and lands. So he's got a tremendous amount of respect here in Hawaii and also in California and in the U.S. And hopefully he can be an embassy. And he's been recognized as UN, United Nations, UNESCO ambassador for Sustainable Development Goal 14, which is the life below water, protecting 30% of our oceans. And you know, if I could get Jason on the film that I'm making, you might be watching it on Shark Week next year.
Oh yeah. Well, I think he would be honored to
call his agent
to be on your film, you know. And to your point about and I agree, Jason Momoa, he's a fantastic guy, and he really gets it. He really cares, as do you. And I feel like part of the idea to help persuade the public and to educate them goes back to what you said about education, having like a Chinese Shark Week or something like that. But also a lot of it falls in the media. I mean, anytime there's a shark in the news, it's always big caps that says like, you know, shark spotted off of Florida, like it's some terrible thing, like the Titanic sinking again, you know. And it's just, you know, the governor of New York, Governor Hochul, deployed drones to watch the sharks last week. And it's the whole public presentation or media presentation, I think, that really plays into the clickbait of shark fear. And I think we need to change there. But I know we're running out of time, but I do want to say to you, and we've had a lot of guests on this week from all kinds of organizations, so I don't say this lightly, but I feel like what you do and Shark Stewards, you do it better than anyone, and you get it better than most. And you just do such great work. And I just want to encourage the listeners to go to your website, make a donation, support your work. And there's too much to list, but what's like the next big thing you're working on? I know you guys are very, very busy, but like, what do you want people to look at next?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's very kind. There are a lot of great groups.
True. Thank you.
And one thing is we're super collaborative. You're trying to have open arms to work together with all organizations and cultures. And, you know, we're very grassroots, so people don't just have to donate. You know, we have hundreds of volunteers across the globe. Kids are writing me, how can we help? You know, and we have a whole list of things that people can do. Start a chapter. We have a presentation that people can give. A lot of free asset science sheets, you know, share the knowledge. And so I'm super gratified by the people around me who help. Like, we do beach cleanups and, you know, 100 people come out, kids come out and pick up thousands of cigarette butts. You know, there's so much that people can do.
Awesome.
That doesn't cost any money. But our next really big campaigns is this Eastern Pacific, reducing shark bycatch. We want to go back wherever the next Convention of International Trade of Endangered Species is, CITES. We were able to work really hard. We were there to list these and the other all requiem sharks and all hammerhead sharks, as well as guitarfish. Over 100 species of sharks and rays are now listed to protect them or at least reduce trade of their body parts. We want to uplist this shark and the whale shark to Appendix 1, zero kill, zero take, you know, almost zero retention except for scientific or cultural purposes. But also protecting our new natural marine sanctuaries, trying to attain those sustainable development goals that were established in Aichi 8 years ago to protect 30% of our oceans by 2030. And that's three natural marine sanctuaries in the Pacific that we're working with President Biden, the Congress, and through NOAA to create one off of California, the Chumash Heritage, which would be the first truly heritage-driven indigenous Native American protected area that will protect cultural sites as well as the natural resources, and one in the Papahanaumo Kuakea, which will also open up a lot more science and money for NOAA to better manage it, as well as the Pacific Remote Islands. So that's a big campaign that the public can go to our website, sign petitions. Public comment period is reopening anytime. So get on our newsletter and we'll send you out an alert to tell NOAA that we want to support these, tell Congress. In marine protected areas, protecting all marine life is important for Americans. And by doing that, we will achieve those goals. We will be one of the leading nations in the world to protect the oceans and sharks.
And we should be. And you get it, David. And I hope you live to 200 years old and you can do this work forever. Thank you so much. And the sharks, thank you too for everything you do. You just do such a great job. And I can't encourage our listeners and viewers enough and everyone watching just to check out their work and educate yourself and get involved. No matter what state you're in or what country you're in, there's always something you can do. And again, the website is sharkstewards.org. And it will move you, my friends, and you will get inspired. So, David, thank you so much. I hope to meet you someday and face to face, maybe surf with you in Hawaii sometime when I'm down there with the wife.
I'd rather
go diving with you, actually.
Yeah, let's go diving. Also in California, we dive in La Jolla with Seven Gills doing education, and I'm on the mainland during the academic year. So we have our Sharktoberfest events with the National Marine Sanctuary in San Francisco in September and go out to the Farallon Islands and do education on white sharks, but also the sanctuary and Sharktoberfest. What's better than beer and sharks?
Nothing. The story of my life. I have a beer right here, but I didn't want to unclass and promote Coors Light, but there you go. Get on board with it.
But, unclass, is that what you said?
What's that?
Did you say unclasp? That would have been.
I didn't want to unclasp.
This is water,
the show.
But I'll toast you anyway.
Thank you, sir. Cheers to you. And I will plan on that. That's San Francisco Sharktoberfest, and you're up there?
Yeah.
We don't need an excuse to go to San Francisco, where it's our home away from home. So I will plan on that, and I look forward to seeing you. And please come back on the show soon and anytime that you're free. I know you're a busy guy, but you're always welcome.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you too, David. Thanks again, sir, and be safe.
Yeah, happy Shark Week.
Happy Shark Week.